Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Patricia Calder. Each week at this time, we visit with a local author, who is sometimes, as it is this week, also an artist or photographer. We get an introduction to their work, a glimpse into their lives, we ask them what prompts them to write, and we have an opportunity to hear them read from their work. As I said, we're very pleased to have Pat with us today.
Thank you.
Pat is a retired high school teacher of English. She has published articles in local newspapers, magazines, online, and in the Globe and Mail. A number of her short stories have appeared in anthologies, and she has a collection of 12 stories that, she hopes, will be published in the near future. But this afternoon, we have invited her to come and tell us about her brand new novel, Roadblock. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
So, Roadblock, why did you write it, Pat? What inspired the story?
Well, first of all, I was at a writer's group in Brighton in the basement of the library, and we had a prompt, which is a sentence or a phrase, and the writers in the group have to write for 10 minutes. And the prompt this time was, "A siren screamed." When I came home from that night, I considered that all of my writing lately had been about death. And I wondered why. And then, of course, I realized that it went right back to when I was 5 years old. My little brother, who was then three, died very suddenly. He was well in the afternoon, and he died that night. And it was shocking. It was put in the newspapers. It was a terrible thing for my parents to go through. My mother was a nurse, so it was just devastating, of course. And when I did my research, I found that 2,500 children die in Canada every year, year after year. So I thought I would write a novel starting with the death of a child on the front page.
Wow, that's a big subject to tackle, that's for sure. So tell us a little about the characters that you chose for this particular book. How did they come together?
I started with a 22-year-old journalist because I used to teach journalism, and he covers the story of the death of the little girl. And then I added a 12-year-old boy, the brother of the dead little girl, and the family, of course. Also, the boss of the journalist, his name is Vince Weber, and he's not only the editor of the newspaper, he's a hard-drinking jazz musician who's very tough but kind. It becomes a mentor to the main character, Sean. And then I added an old farmer who becomes a mentor to the little boy, Kurt. And the farmer lives just outside of town, and he has a couple of horses, because horses are a hobby of mine. I threw in a pretty girl, Megan, and she develops a crush on Sean. And then we had to have a villain who, of course, tries to interfere in the love story. And also, Jason Connor, the villain, tries to interfere in a friendship that's developing between the young journalist Sean and the boy Kurt. So he's a nasty piece of work.
Ooh, that's quite the motley crew, and I imagine that you can have a lot of fun with some of those characters. When you write, what comes first for you, the story, the plot, or the characters? Do you make an outline, for instance?
If I had been wiser, I would have made an outline, but I didn't. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought it was going to be a story, and then it got longer and longer, and I kept exploring more of the characters, more of their lives, and it really was a question of how do people transition from the shock after the death of a child. When it happened in my family, I was five. And in those days, the conventional wisdom was that you just don't talk about it after that. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really know. I wanted to figure it out because obviously it was still deep in my subconscious. So I started with the question, how do people get through the grief after the death of a child? Because people do. I knew people who had. And I was puzzled by this, because I thought the most devastating thing for me, of course, would be the death of a child. So I just wrote one chapter at a time, not in chronological order, just whatever occurred to me as the insights came, and I tried to round out the lives of my characters, make them seem real, and they became more real to me as I went along. So the story skips ahead in time sometimes and then stays in one spot, like Christmas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's quite a long section on Christmas and quite a long section surrounding the anniversary of the death of the little girl, because these are key times in processing grief, and the characters had a lot to do in those times. But it's not a story about my family. It's a different story, different characters, different period of time, and so on. So it's autobiographical in the emotions.
Right.
But
because there's a child dealing with grief as well as adults dealing with grief.
That's right. Right. That's right, yes.
Well, perhaps you could read a little bit to us from Roadblock.
Okay. This is in chapter one, but it's not the absolute opening. It's halfway through chapter one. After the funeral, Kurt, the brother of the dead girl, dreaded the return to school. This is June, and the girl died in May. Nothing was the same. His backpack felt heavy as he trudged across the parking lot. A sudden hush hit the playground. Even though he avoided looking, he felt all eyes upon him. At least Jonathan was brave enough to walk by his side to the classroom door. Kurt only caught pieces of the teacher's lesson before she came down the aisle toward him and slipped a square white envelope containing a card onto his desk. Shit, he thought, and asked to go to the washroom. Instead, he followed the hall to the back door exit and left the building. A trail led through the woods to a stone beach, where he knew the grade 8 kids came to light up. When he arrived at the clearing overlooking the lake, a boy he knew only by name, Russell Baker, was having a smoke in moody silence. He acknowledged Kurt with a look from under this mop of black hair, then ignored him. Kurt was glad of the near anonymity. After a few minutes, he didn't know what to do with himself, so he went back to class. He got through the morning by doodling Spider-Man images in every imaginable pose. When the teacher came by his desk, he didn't even try to hide his notebook. "That's good, Kurt. You draw very well," she said. She did not remark that he should get back to work. He didn't remember what he was supposed to be doing. At noon, he bundled up his backpack and rode away on his bike. He pedaled through the nature reserve to the stream. All he was capable of this afternoon was throwing pebbles in the water and watching the ripples circle away from the center. Why did a butterfly only last one season? Why did Jenny only have 3 years? How long would he have? Even his parents couldn't answer these questions, so what was the point of school? When he arrived home at 4 o'clock, his mother grabbed him to her chest. She had been crying. "I thought you were lost too," she said, taking his face in her hands. "Don't you ever run away again." "Mom, I didn't run away. I'm here." He pushed himself from her, went to his room, propped his back against a pillow to listen to Brian Adams. When his father came home from work, he spent some time in the kitchen before Kurt heard footsteps coming down the hall. "How was your day?" his father asked, turning off Kurt's kettle blaster. When Kurt just looked at him, his father said, "Well then, do you want to hear about my day?" Kurt nodded. "A few people shook my hand and mumbled at me. All day I was display number one, folks watching me out of the corners of their eyes. Is he going to break down? Well, I didn't, but I'm worn out with trying not to." He wiped his brow and reached for Kurt's hand. "How do you think your mother's day went? She had nobody staring at her. She's having an awkward cup of tea with the minister, and the school phones to say you're missing. So, she had a great afternoon. Understand?" Kurt flung himself across the bed into his father's arms. "Sorry." The word was muffled into a shirt still sweaty from work. "I hate school. It's stupid." His father held him tight. "We're in this together. You, your mother, and I. We all have to pull an oar. My job is to go to work every day, whether I feel like it or not. Your mother's is to run the house and keep us fed and decent. Your job is to attend school. No ifs, ands, or buts. I'm sorry, son, but that's life. We carry on. Kurt lifted his head and looked at his father. How's that supposed to help Jenny? His father's eyes grew wet and he blinked fast. Jenny's beyond help, you know that, son. Don't make me say it. Kurt felt hot color rising in his face. Now, you and I are going into the kitchen and eat whatever your mother has prepared for us, and then we're going to thank her. Got that?
Yes, sir. Kurt gave in.
You'll have to grow up faster than other kids your age, son. It's the nasty truth.
Oh, well, poor little fella. Anyway, now we'll take a short break.
Okay.